Welcome to the Life Self Mastery Podcast, where we bring in entrepreneurs who have created online businesses and improved their lifestyles. Here's your host, Rohit Malhotra.
Hi everyone, I'm Rohit from LifeSellMastery.com, and today we have Ryan Fishkin, who built SEO software Moz to $47.4 million in revenue per year with over 36,000 customers. Ryan is the author of the book Lost and Founder, A Painful Honest Field Guide to the Startup World, and a founder of Inbound.org, and has recently founded SparkToro, a software and data company focused on helping people understand how and where to reach their target audiences. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, Rohit. Good to be here.
Awesome. So, you know, can you talk about your journey? How did you get on to start SEO Moz, and what got you interested into SEO?
Yeah. Well, initially, I was a web designer, and we were using some SEO subcontractors to help with our, you know, the work that we were doing. This is back in the early 2000s. And we actually went, you know, badly into debt, and we had no money. We didn't have the ability to pay our subcontractors. And so I had to start doing the work myself because we had promised it to our clients. So yeah, I got into SEO, and I think I got interested in it mostly because, or I stayed interested in it because it was such an opaque field at the time, and it was so difficult to learn and to do. The search engines were so, you know, mysterious and unclear with how they worked. A lot of the consultants were very secretive, and I wanted to change that. So I started SEO Moz.
Got it. And I think you started as a blog, and then you later on made it a SaaS business. How did this start happen? And how did you grow the traffic initially?
So I think that the traffic came because the blog started to gain traction probably a couple of years after I started it. So in 2003, no one was really coming. By 2005, there were, a few hundred, maybe 1,000 visitors coming every day. And then by 2007, we had many thousands of visitors every day. And so when we launched our software, we kind of had this built-in audience of customers and potential customers who already knew us and liked us, trusted us, and wanted to support what we were doing. And I think that that made a huge difference for the company.
Uh-huh. And what were the revenues in the first year or so when you started your business?
Oh gosh, from 2001 to 2005, it was almost negligible. I'd be surprised if we made more than $50,000 or $60,000 a year, and oftentimes our expenses were higher than that, so we were losing money. But by the time, so the first year we did software, which was 2007. I think we did about $400,000, maybe $450,000 in revenue in software. And then, the next year doubled that to, well, more than doubled to $1.1 million, and then to $2.9 million, and then $5.7 million, $11.4 million. So we were sort of doubling every year for, I think, 7 years there.
Oh, that's awesome. So how did you sustain yourself from the period 2001 to 2005? Did you have a full-time job, or were you moonlighting with some other business?
No. I lived with my girlfriend, Geraldine, who's now my wife, and she paid the rent and all our bills. And that's how I got by on, only a few hundred dollars a month to pay expenses. So she was definitely, in a lot of ways, our first investor.
Oh, awesome. Got it. And you also eventually went on to raise capital. So, why did you decide to raise capital? And from whom did you, who were the investors from whom you had raised the capital?
Yeah, our first round was at the end of the year, at November of 2007. And we raised from Ignition Partners, which is a venture firm here in the Seattle area. And then we basically used that money to build our link index, the initial link index, right? Because Google had sort of taken away the ability to see all the link data about your competitors, about yourself. And we thought that would be something really valuable that folks would want. When we built that, I think it took us about a year to kind of turn that into an actual product. So turn the money that we'd raised into an actual product. And when we did, we launched it the following October, and the next month we were profitable again. So that had been, ended up being a really good decision. You know, lots of folks did want that data, signed up for our service. You know, we got back to being profitable quickly. And I think that was, you know, that was really our goal, was to get this new product to be able to exist. And I, you know, in terms of the decision to raise, well, so what was weird is that I didn't go out pitching to raise money. We actually got pitched by investors. They had found us through the blog or whatever, and sort of said, "Hey, would you guys be interested in raising some money and sort of taking this thing bigger?" And I thought that sounded really exciting. And I thought, you know, I thought I needed to raise money if I wanted to be kind of considered a serious entrepreneur, and get to play with like the big boys and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know, media perception and cultural perception that if you raise money, you know, you're a serious entrepreneur, and if you don't, you're a lifestyle entrepreneur, and you know, that's not as impressive, and nobody will really listen to you. You're not as cool. So, which is a dumb way to think, right? But I think that biases a lot of people, myself included. And yeah, that's essentially the story.
Yeah, no, you're right. The bias is still there, where, you know, entrepreneurs are celebrated for raising capital rather than making money, especially in tech world. You know, here in India also, you celebrated if you raise money, but entrepreneurs who make money or have a huge amount of profits are looked down upon. So you know, do you think the trend is going to become like that, or is it going to change, you know, after, you know, over some time? Because in the last couple of years, lifestyle entrepreneurs like Tim Ferriss and a few others have, you know, called it a movement whereby, you know, you can run a profitable business and live a great lifestyle. So you know, what is your take on that?
Yeah, I think that, so first off, I think that the term lifestyle entrepreneur is just, or lifestyle business, is just a pejorative used to try and insult people who have, you know, potentially great businesses, many of them vastly superior businesses to institutionally backed ones, but they're, what's the right way to say it? They're trying to make it seem like it's a bad way to go, that, you know, anything but aiming for hyper growth is failure. And so I think that we should generally, as an entrepreneurial community, just reject the terminology, because I think it biases behavior a lot, and not in a good way. As far as where the trend is going, I don't know. I mean, I want to hope that more alternatives to, you know, venture-backed or institutional capital-backed companies can exist, and that we're getting to a time frame where there's going to be more, you know, opportunity there. But I don't know for sure. It's hard to say. I'm hoping for it. I'm trying to help, you know, make that movement happen myself. But yeah, hard to say.
Got it. You know, you had a long journey with Moz, where you've been in the company for such a long time, and you raised capital and had to lay off people, and you had a CEO who could replace you. So, you know, what kept you going for such a long time, and any advice for entrepreneurs who, you know, struggling in the first 3 or 4 years when they're trying to build an audience and build revenue. So, you know, what is the long-term view for an entrepreneur?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the really hard things to do in your early days is to know whether you're onto something or whether you have sort of a, you know, problem and you need to change your business or potentially, you know, give up on something and try something new. And that, I think that's a really difficult call to be able to make, right? It's just not, it's not always easy and clear. And so I have a lot of empathy for entrepreneurs who are struggling to figure out, hey, am I onto something or is this a non-starter? And I guess, you know, the best advice I can give folks is that if you are excited about what you're doing and you can see sort of opportunity existing in the field, right? Meaning that there are more and more people searching for what you're doing every day and there's your competitors are sort of doing very well and growing their businesses and the market seems to be getting bigger and there's, you know, a few hundred to a few thousand people that are very, very passionate about what you're doing. I think then you're onto something. And if you're missing most of those signs or all of those signs, you maybe need to reconsider your course.
Got it. And you know, how were you able to grow your community around Moz? You know, a lot of you have thousands of customers. So, did you incentivize your users to refer them to other customers, or you know? How did you go about cultivating and, you know, and growing this community?
Yeah, so most of our community was built around, I guess, content and conversation, specifically in the SEO field, right? So trying to help folks understand how to do SEO and share their stories and experiences around the practice. We did not... I think we once had for a brief time period, we had an affiliate program that had, you know, some sort of an incentive model to sign folks up, and it did not work very well. And there was all sorts of fraud and manipulation. And so we dropped it, I think pretty quickly. Maybe we had it for a year, but we definitely, you know, had a very strong organic community, right? People who just liked what we were doing, liked the brand, liked the blog, contributed content, answered questions in the Q&A forum, you know, built relationships through the company and through its events. And that led to a lot of our, you know, community success over time. But it was a more organic, less intentional effort, and one really built around content rather than a specific, you know, community connection design.
Mm-hmm. How can businesses go about understanding the audience and building business around them?
Yeah, that's a broad question. I think one of the best ways to understand your audience is to spend time doing a few things. One, doing the work yourself. So whatever kinds of things your audience is doing, whatever profession they have and jobs they're doing, I do recommend doing some of it yourself. I think doing SEO first as a consultant and then doing a lot of pro bono SEO work and a lot of teaching, right, required me to learn and know the practice very well. And that meant I had a lot of empathy for our customers who did it too. I would also say that spending in-person time with your customers, whether that's through, you know, conferences and events or through on-site visits or through hosting them at your offices or, you know, meeting them for coffee or beer or what have you, you know, all those kinds of things where you can really spend time with those people in a way where you can understand what they're going through and empathize with them. I think that is tremendously valuable. So all those different things.
Got it. And you know, why did you leave Moz and build Spark Toro?
Yeah. So I left Moz at the end of February, and that was basically because I'd had some conflicts with the leadership at the company after stepping down as CEO, and specifically after the layoffs that Moz did in 2016, I think that was. That was kind of hard for me. You know, Moz was for 14 years, 15 years, you know, it was really my baby. And I wanted to see that company do extraordinary things. I think I realized that I couldn't build the company the way I wanted anymore. And I didn't love everything about the work that I was doing there. I want to be honest in that the decision was not entirely mine to leave. But that being said, I started Spark Toro for a number of reasons. I love building companies, especially in the early stages. I felt like this was a problem. The problem Spark Toro is solving around audience intelligence is a problem that needed to be solved, that software should be able to solve, and that could save a lot of marketers a lot of time and pain and inaccuracy. And I think I had a little bit of chip on my shoulder too. You know, I have something to prove with this new company.
Got it. So is it still in the beta mode, or you're full time into this startup and growing your user base?
Oh gosh, no. I'm full time in the startup, but I think we're probably 6 to 9 months away from having any sort of betaable product, maybe more than that. So we still got a lot of work to do to build the initial data set and design out the product. We built some little alpha internal tools to test things and started crawling data sources and made some progress on those fronts, but still have lots more work to go.
Got it. And you know, I want to talk about your book, The Lost and Founder. Why did you write that book? You know, it has got great reviews on Amazon, where you very transparent about your whole journey, you taking up VC money and the long journey that you have. But you also talk about that, you know, with VC money comes, there are a lot of strings attached to it. Why do you say that? And if you could go back in time, would you take up VC money, or would you, keep it bootstrapped?
No, I think I probably would have raised money again. I think Moz is actually the kind of company where venture capital makes sense. I think we did very well with our first round, but I think with our second and third rounds of funding, especially, we were not as wise in our spending. And, you know, so I wish I could go back in time and change things tactically, but no, I think that Moz is exactly the kind of company that if we had made good decisions along the way and sort of, you know, kept a tight focus, we could have built a $100 million, $200 million company, had a very successful outcome for our investors, as well as for the team and the company. So yeah, I think there's, that's a good sort of business for venture. That being said, I have a lot of regrets about how we spent it. And, I definitely have a lot of frustrations around the binary forcing function of venture in terms of a business's outcome, right? Either it's, you know, grow extremely quickly and reach, you know, an exit, and a very, you know, an extremely lucrative and extremely unlikely exit, statistically speaking, or die trying. And I think there's a lot of awesome potential outcomes for a business that sit in the middle of those two, but that, institutional capital doesn't really let you pursue. So that's why for SparkToro, I opted instead. I think in the early stages, when you don't know what a business might be, I think it's really smart to preserve your options, right? And to say, hey, we're not going to raise venture because we don't know if this is a venture scale business, and neither do any of our investors, and we don't want to be forced to only have that, you know, one successful outcome option. That was very important to us. So we raised in a very different way, a very unique way that can still make a lot of money for our investors, even if we don't end up, you know, becoming a $100 million a year business.
You know, in the book and also in your blog, you know, you talk about, you know, found entrepreneurship can be a lonely journey, and you know, founders can get into depression. So, how can founders overcome depression, and and because, you know, it's difficult to talk about your problems with friends and family, who may not understand what you're going through. So what are your suggestions for founders to overcome depression?
Wow. I think everyone is different. I think when you have mental and emotional issues that sort of plague you and make you, you know, not your best, and potentially even sink into depression, I think that the right outcome can be different for everyone, but there are a few shared characteristics that I certainly recommend. One of which is having a strong network of other entrepreneurs and friends who are supportive, who you feel like you can talk to, who understand, especially those who've gone through it before and been open about it. I think that those folks are the most helpful. You know, the most helpful people for me when I was going through it were those who'd been through it themselves. And I would also say that for everyone, whether you have you know, these issues or not, therapy and professional coaching is hugely valuable. And I would certainly recommend everyone who can try to work with a professional in that field. I think that will make you a better CEO no matter where you are. Sleep is really, really good for folks. I think sleep is strongly correlated. Getting, you know, 8.5 hours of a night of time in bed, hopefully good sleep, that can make a huge difference for folks who go through these kinds of things. And certainly when I was sleeping worst was when I had my worst problems, and I'm not sure which came first, but, definitely improving sleep has helped me.
Got it. So let's quickly do the top three. What's your favorite business book?
Favorite business book? Gosh, there's so many good ones. How about a favorite recent business book? I really enjoyed Kim Scott's Radical Candor, which just came out.
Okay. Got it. And, you know, if you could go back in time when you started Moz, what is the one thing you would have focused on?
I would have stayed entirely focused on SEO, just helping people do better SEO through our software. None of the other things.
Got it. And do you have any favorite online tool, for example, Gmail or Slack?
Oh, online tools for communication specifically?
Not for communication specifically. Any online tool which you use for productivity for your business?
Oh gosh, I mean, I am pretty much addicted to the Google Suite. So, you know, I use Docs and Sheets and Gmail and GCalendar. I have found Calendly really good for scheduling.
Got it. And you know, what are the best way people can reach out to you?
I'm available on email, rand@sparktoro.com, and I'm most active on Twitter, where I'm @randfish.
All right, Rand, thanks a lot for coming onto the show. I'm sure listeners would have learned a lot from this interview. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rohit. Appreciate you having me. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Life Self Mastery Podcast. where we teach you how to start and grow your online business. For more information, visit Rohit's blog at www.lifeselfmastery.com.